welcome to Three Wise DMs, the podcast for three dungeon masters who've been doing this for way too long. Talk about all the things we do to try to make our games as good as they can be.
Hi, I'm Tony.
I'm Chris.
People get ready. There's a train coming. You don't need no ticket. You just get on board. All you need is faith to hear the diesels humming. You don't need no ticket. You just thank the Lord. And a
Yeah. Very soulful, Dave. Very
soulful. Oh, man. Yeah. I hit the second line. I'm sorry, everyone out there. The second line was wrong. I didn't quite get the harmony there, but that happens. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Three Wise DMs. This is the Rock and Roll DM. DM Dave coming out on the airwaves. I just felt like a DJ from back in the day there, right? Like, we're coming back to the airwaves from the Curtis Mayfield and the Impressions. But that was Curtis Mayfield and the Impressions of People Get Ready. But what are people getting ready for? Well, I'll tell you what. The Three Wise DMs are getting ready to, whether this is a good idea or not, we're ready to go back into the Call of Cthulhu universe. We've already discussed with our Keeper of Arcane Lore that's going to be running this about the stairs incident. So,
that is a necessary bit of information.
You need to let them know. We are traumatized players. Go back to episode one when the three of us sat around. We talked about traumatized players. That's what Call of Cthulhu did to us. So, a friend of Bonnie and I's, a gaming friend, Elizabeth, who has played a ton of Call of Cthulhu. I mean, she's played tons and tons and tons of the game. She loves the game. She loves narrative kind of stuff. She's super into role-playing. Threw out the idea, hey, if you wanted me to run a game for your game group, I'm game. And I said, yes, please, because anytime people want to run games for us, I'm going to say yes. What this led into is us creating our characters for this one shot, and we've discussed the Google Docs that, like, Tony and Chris and I will send out to, like, let people know about the Lord of the Rings campaign, about the Journey to Ragnarok campaign, about the Dragonlance campaign. And for this one shot, Elizabeth sent out like 20 questions about your character, like deep stuff, like what is their greatest fear? What is their greatest memory? What is their greatest trinket? And I think all of us were kind of like, it was like a slap. It was the cold water ice bucket challenge, right? Where we got hit. So we started talking and we said, the question, is there such a thing as too much character development when it comes to backstory? And that's kind of where we're jumping off. So as people are getting ready, how much getting ready are we doing? And I've rambled on, so I'm going to throw it out to you guys.
Well, I feel like there has to be a decent amount of communication between the player and the DM to determine that. So while you're creating this massive pontification, perhaps, of your backstory, how much is your DM looking for? Or is their DM looking for a couple of threads? Are they really looking for some things they can grab on for more long-term planning? Also, the question is, how much can you really utilize? So if these are things that are truly valuable, that help shape and direct your character, you know, when your character, allowing them to hit the ground running, so to speak, in the, you know, the first session, then that's fantastic. Then that's very valuable. Then that's time well spent. But if not, then you're creating, sometimes you can create a lot of plot threads. And remember, Thorn was talking about one of his players, I think it was Tom, wanted to have his character be the BBEG's brother that he loosely tossed out there. And he's like, no, thank you.
Screw being the son of the king. I want to be the son of the BBEG.
So, yeah, there is boundaries within that. But, yeah, communication between the DM and the player is key.
Yeah, no, and I think a lot of this, you need the context of the fact that it's a one-shot. I think in a longer campaign, it may not be the same kind of thing where you're like, wow, this is a lot of information, and I feel like I'm going to Not as I slip on stairs and die, right? Like we've
it's already played
that part. But I know that that's what it is. And at the same point, obviously, that's what as a Cthulhu game, that's what you're looking for, right? Like that's I played all the solo adventures. Like you're looking to go through it, find a cool mystery, and then you die at the end. But it's like a lot of work to do in that sort of context there. But the one thing is like. There's parts about it that I really like, and I think it's very cool. And I think that, like to Tony's point, it gives you bits to talk about when you get to the table the first time. But I just think that there's a level of things, and I guess as we would go with these characters, they would do it. But there's a level that it grows as you put it on at the table and start to do things with the character, and you find out, oh, maybe he likes this or doesn't like this based upon that. Maybe you're feelings about what he was all about changed slightly during the campaign. I feel like that way that I've had that with a couple of my players where there was a point where I was like, something's got to change. I need something different here than what the path that I was doing. So I think it's just, it's good for getting all that information. I just think that there's the character development often deeper stuff happens during the actual play of the game, right? Like the process of the campaign where you actually start to really develop the character versus just this sort of, this sheet of this is what I'm all about. You know, these are like some of the questions I write. Like when you start class for the first day, this is Chris kind of thing.
That was the first thing I was making the point of, Chris, was that, I think what got us with it is that this was for a one shot and we do tons of one shots. Right. We do a lot of one shots for birthdays, all of this kind of stuff. I mean, we throw out different things. We do Marvel. We do D&D. We do Pathfinder. We do Top Secret. We do Avatar, the role playing game. Right. And I think that's really what got it was this. OK, but like this is for 4 to 5 hours. Right. So I think that's a big part of it. But the first thing I also thought, because the Wizard Washburn, our resident artificer, Scott does not like one shots overall. He's told me before, like when we get together to do like the birthday, like he enjoys the game. He enjoys getting together and has fun with it. Right. Even though I think like he's at this point, just like in our Marvel campaign, he is Captain America and he has like this ongoing arc. So it kind of goes against his idea, now he's not in this one because he actually isn't a fan of horror gaming, but he's not a big fan of one shots. Because he's always like, I'm not that invested in my character because it's a one shot. And I'm like, interesting, because now, like with my character, the hardware store owner, Gary, who's actually Gerardo Guintanala del Toro y Sanchez. You know, he's got this long Spanish name. He goes by Gary and he owns Sanchez Hardware. Like, I know so much about this guy that I'm interested to see one. How much does Elizabeth play with it? Because that's one of the things, like when you have a brand new DM or keeper of arcane lore, the GM coming in, they don't know how your table runs or how you play. You don't know how they run. And I'm interested to see how much does she get in of some of the meat, not all of the things, you couldn't possibly, but some of the meat of it. So that's kind of making me... I'm interested to see that. But yeah, Chris, also as your point, like one of the questions in the 20 questions, because this is Cthulhu, was how does your character want to die? Right? Like what's a good death for that? And I'm like, oh shit, like she did the reading and understands the homework, right? Like this is Cthulhu. Like,
that's the ultimate part there. It's right at the end. And
So we did a lot of heavy character development in this particular case beforehand. But what I think is really interesting here, so we did all these questions, and since you've brought this up, we'll dive into it. Yes, I have a character who has never seen game action, yet I feel like I know this person. However, I think we're all going to have a real moment at some point during this game where all this backstory and this idea about what our character is in our head meets the environment. And while I don't expect we're going to have a lot of one-on-one moments at this massive table that's being run, it's going to be very environmentally driven. And then whoever manages to survive any of this, I think will be vastly different at the end.
No, 100%. And I think that's that's where the development happens there. Like, I like the 20, and I think to you guys' point, like, it starts to help to build it. I worry in a one-shot you're going to be wanting to, like, Yeah, you're going to be wanting to push some of these angles out just because I have a list now of all these things. So we're just going to try to pepper it all in during the thing there. But it's, I think if you took this and you turned it into a campaign where they had some level of permanence, right? You know, right now it's a very, like, it feels like a 1E sort of thing where it's like, you know, you're going to go into the dungeon and yeah, you're probably going to die, right? Like there's not going to be any kind of great, you know, achievement or anything. Like you're gonna go, you're gonna find out something horrible, and like, you know, Cthulhu's gonna come through and eat you or something like that.
Stick his tentacles up your nose.
Yeah. You know, so it's you know, or liquefy your brain or something like that. I think it's in the context of it. So I think that, like, with the question, like, I think that there isn't ever too much character development. I think back to Tony's earlier point. I think in a general campaign, you may not get 20 questions out of everybody, right? Like you may get a couple here. Somebody may go give you a full 20, right? Somebody may give you some of these. Somebody may just answer them like what they feel like they can answer and stuff like that, depending on their engagement. But I don't think that there's too much. It's just, I think that it's the, like in the end, it's always a game, even called, you know, called to with all the role playing. It's a game. So it's when you're like, the car, like I've designed it in the factory. I have all the blueprints. I know every inch of that. But all of a sudden I put it on the track and it's a little different now. And it might even be better, right? And some of those things change. But it's like, so I don't want to be too invested in what the blueprint was, because that's, you know, I'm looking for what the car is like around the track a little bit. So
that goes back to one of the earlier points when you guys made that. Like I've done, how many times I know I have, where you develop your idea of the character and you can get a really, I mean, I don't think there's any characters that we have that we've played in any system where we didn't have a, like, even if it's a smaller amount, we kind of know, okay, this is generally what this character is. But to the point that when you finally hit session one and you start going, how quickly, like within like two encounters, you're already a completely different character, because you're like, this is just how this is playing. This is the energy of the table, right? So I think with that, it definitely, like, as much as I think I know what Gary is about, how he pushes into the world and it pushes back, and then he also actually interacts with not the idea of Chris's like author from New England, yeah, that's now, yeah, come to Texas,
Thomas,
right?
Albright. Yes.
Yeah, right. Like I understand the concept of him, but when I actually am now interacting with Chris at the table, how will that maybe change how I play Gary? And then the second point I will make is I do think it is very important. We say this a lot, and this is a perfect example of it, that it depends very much on the system that you are playing. So if in something like a 5e one shot, I really don't need all of that information about your character, because a lot of the stuff is going to be built on mechanics, right? A lot of it is going to be skill checks and combat encounters and some role-playing stuff, right? And all that. But it's just a different situation where when I'm coming into this Cthulhu game, I'm just a guy, like, to the point where, I mean, I don't know, Chris, I think you might have made your own character sheet, but Elizabeth literally started to just make all the character sheets once people kind of told her, this is my character, this is what I do, this is my background, whatever. And I said, yeah, just make up my character sheet. I don't really care, because one, you know COC way better than I do, so I don't have to go through the rule book to figure out where to put my points. But also, like, it almost, in this system, doesn't matter, because in this way I really can play, as Thorin used to say, getting players to play off of the sheet. So I'm not looking down to see, what does Gary have? You know, what I have an aisle 4 in the hardware store. I'm thinking about, what is Gary like? Why is he going to do this? Because he's a normal guy in East Texas, and some weird ass crap is starting to happen.
Yeah, no, I rolled up when she sent it over, I had played before, right? So I just opened up my, the copy of the freaking Investigator's Handbook and started creating a character. And one of the things I liked about it, truthfully, was that it actually created the roles, you know, because I was just rolling the 3d6 or 2d6 plus 6 kind of stuff. And the roles themselves actually turned him into something. It actually created the character concept in a large thing. Like, I went in sort of as a blank slate. Like, I didn't really know what I wanted him to be, so I just started rolling. And then as these roles came in, all of a sudden I was like, hey, he's smart, right? But he has a really weak constitution. Like, well, why does he have that? Right?
That is so so old school, where literally, like, you rolled, like, for D&D, like OD&D, you rolled in order. And, like, maybe you're a fighter, maybe you're not. I don't know yet. That's interesting.
And once I saw the low dex and the con, I was like, well, he has to have some kind of condition, and he walks with a limp, you know, something like that. Like, that makes sense now. That can be part of whatever he is. I mean, obviously, it's just a, you know, like an ailment or something, but then it peppers into the rest of his backstory. So it helped a little bit for me to roll it, because I didn't have a good concept of what I was going to be, you know, like in Cthulhu. It's so wide open compared to 5e. Like, I have, like, you know, these 13 freaking classes to choose from, or I can be any one of these occupations, you know, like, so it was kind of nice.
That aren't really good. The occupation that won't really make that much of a mechanical difference, give or take. It'll just make a flavor difference. And like, that's what I was saying with, like, because Cthulhu is so narrative focused, it's so character driven that something like this, I think, kind of it makes more sense than if we were running a D&D one shot or something like that.
Well, you talked about the energy at the table. I'm kind of feeling like Abbott Costello. That's my prediction there. And as far as the classes go and the occupations, I feel like, well, I'm going to be a cowboy, you know, cow puncher in 2000 here, so to speak. And that's kind of like a power trap, where I'm this tough guy who could throw hands and he has a gun. And I know if I do anything too boisterous, I'm going to get myself murdered. So, but
or arrested. I can't wait to see Tony getting thrown into the sheriff's cell, like three seconds into the game.
Yeah,
hey, let's not rule that out. I mean, you know, for your campaign, Dave, Hawk was three lines in a funny voice, and I just kind of expanded from that.
But yeah, and that was just to jump in with that, Tony, that was a good point of, like, kind of the opposite of what Chris was just saying with the character building out of the thing, is you had this whole idea of Hawk, and then as you punched into the world, Hawk became actually an incredibly, like, serious, dramatic type of figure, you know, as opposed to just a one-liner, you know. I mean, there were the one-liners, don't get us wrong, but yeah, once you interacted with the world and the people, right?
No one was more surprised than I was that he developed like that. But as far as character development, that stage goes to that level, because that allows us to hit the ground running. I'll say it again, but you're not going to go through this awkward phase in the beginning, because everyone's not trying to really feel themselves out. Everybody kind of already has lines they're looking to execute. Like, you're probably got some idea about where they are with their personality, with their likes, their dislikes, all this stuff, how they're going to interact with everybody, which of course is really subject to change through the course of the game. But in that respect, I like it, because it allows us to kind of get right to it and bypass all of that.
I think that it always brings it back to the context of it being a one shot with this, but that I think, and I get what you were talking about, the Hawk story earlier. And in that case, it was a very large case of it that like there's a power of letting it come, like you bring it to the table and then it just starts to go in the direction that it wants to go. Like the tree grows, like how it is. And then you start to be like, oh, hey, you know, like at a certain point you were like, hey, I think I've taken him to a point and now I want to change a little bit more. Right. And you kind of went to the, you know, this sort of power and everything like that and stuff. So I think like that's, in a one shot, you're not going to get that level of that. You're going to have some interplay, the dynamics of the table. Whoever talks more will drive the things there. They're going to be people that don't speak a lot. They're going to be people that speak a lot. So some people are going to share more than others. But in a larger sense, I think there's something to that you don't really know them until you play them three or four times. And then they start to really do not necessarily what they want, but you start to get a good idea of, oh, maybe it wasn't quite what I had. This is how he was when he grew up, but this is how he is now that he just, you know, faced a bunch of ghosts or whatever like that. Like, he's changed now. He's a different person.
What's interesting and what I'm thinking about this, and again, a lot of this is we just don't know yet, because this is not Tony running this one shot, and we kind of know what Tony is looking for and how he's going to take things and run with them. But one of the interesting things, because Chris, like what you were saying, yeah, absolutely. Like you bring somebody to the table and you have an idea of this is who my character is. This is the, even the voice that I'm going to do, whatever. And then once you start playing it, you go, oh, no, it's really not. It's more this way. And I think with because it's the one shot. Right. So you don't in some ways doing all of this prep in the prior to it, even though it can be a little bit of an ice bucket challenge for people that aren't ready to get this Google Doc for a one shot. Right. At first you go, oh, my God, what is happening here? But by doing all of this prep, I almost think like, OK, I have such a much more multifaceted, multidimensional idea of this character. It's much more real and layered and textured. And I only have to let it run for 4, 5, 6 hours. I don't have to worry about what am I going to do at level 5, 20 sessions from now, right? So you almost can, like, with all of that, it's almost like when you're for an actor, right? They get this role, and then you just put that in front of the camera, and that's what goes. So I'm interested to see if that actually works out, that by doing a heavier lift prior to, because it's a one-shot, you have the juice because you don't have to let it run over multi sessions.
Yeah, we have a background with some of these characters that is so deep, sometimes their story really never gets told, and that's really unfortunate, and that could happen for a lot of reasons. The player is just so mysterious they never share it, Beam. Or the DM doesn't properly bring it to light.
Tony still wants to know about the Dragonborn cleric, man. He's just a man. He's not about Tony, it's not about him, dude. It's about his deity. It's about Dala. That's it, dude. It's not about him.
He was the perfect
devotee. He was perfect, yeah.
So after we saved the world and we were like at the bar, I stand behind off camera. What happened was you went to the bathroom. I followed him behind you and I closed the door behind us. And I'm like, you're not leaving until you tell me your backstory. Because, yeah, it's a shame. You had a really awesome backstory. It was very intricate and well thought out. And I wouldn't have figured any, like, you're some prince from a faraway land, and you went on this vision quest. No,
as people probably don't. I don't know if I've said it before, but literally, Beam's backstory was like my D&D version of the story of the Buddha, where he's a prince and he sees like the four things that show impermanence, and he has this whole like awakening. Yeah, like the Hermann Hesse Siddhartha book.
So where I'm going with this is that something like that would have added some flavor to the campaign, like really, truly. And I know the DM can't grab onto every plot, and sometimes you end the campaign and you're like, oh, you never brought up my missing sister. And, you know, you're like, that just didn't work. But that would have added some color. And in the beginning stages, I like to ask the players, like, what are you guys looking for? Like, what are your goals? I don't care if you want to, like, you know, be king of the dragons. That's a goal. I can work with that. It's when they don't know. And then you kind of have to throw some things out there, which you hope they think they're cool, and check back with them later.
Yeah. No, like I for the Lord of the Rings campaign, even for any of them, I like a couple paragraphs. And so when you think about it, in many ways, I'm sort of asking the 20 questions of my own a little bit there, right? Like I'm looking for some level of idea about your character. But I also think, to your point right then, Tony, that it's difficult to hit every story point in that. I mean, my God, especially in a one shot, like that's the part where I'm like, wow, this is a Herculean undertaking to be able to try to hit a good story point for all the different people there. But I'm sure she's more than capable. It's not that, but I think that's just going to be, it's the dynamic of the table, right? Like you take them out and all of a sudden they're not as boisterous as you thought they were, or maybe all of a sudden they, like, you get out there and maybe he's not as good at doing what you thought he was in. Like you say, it sort of change up, or you get the, you know, in a game or two and you're like, I'm not really digging this. I want to kind of try something different. So I think it's just, you know, it's good to have a good idea of your character coming in. It's just, it's difficult because it's going to change. I think with something like this, it would be nice, like you then add on additional questions as you go, like kind of how we go back and forth in the campaign with the fellowship phases, where then you start to get into, I think, a deeper character development, because then I can talk to you after you've had a chance to sit at the table with the character. And then it starts to bring out the nuance in what you start to strip away all these other things, and you're like, oh, this is actually kind of what the character really wants, right? I had all this other stuff around him, but this is the core of what I'm after, and it starts to make it develop a nice thing there.
calling it a Herculean undertaking is absolutely correct, Chris. And that's what kind of makes me where I might in other, like when I first got like the 20 questions doc, and I went, wait, what? Like, was, you know, there's one shot. But then as I saw how Elizabeth was building this out, and the level of prep and like immersiveness that she's going for, I'm like, I really feel like she totally can hit a lot of these points. I think a lot of the points will be hit, even if it's not among all of the participants, it's for your character. You will get what was happening there, you know, and that sometimes happens. Like the reveal to Rasguedo of who Wood Whisperer was very much a that's for Chris moment, right? Like the rest of the table learned about it, but I hit that for you on that one session, and like it didn't matter who else knew it. You were like, that was awesome. Oh my God, right?
Oh yeah.
But like just to give you guys a sense here out there, so what Elizabeth has been starting to do, so just to set the stage here, this is Call of Cthulhu, but it's a modern one. So we're not doing the 1920s, 1930s thing where every other encounter, we're going to have to be like, wait, did they have phones yet? Wait, did they have a, you know, like where it like literally pulls you out of the immersion. So she's put us, it's like 2002, 2003. It's a town in East Texas, a little small town. We, in essence, all know each other. Chris's character is pretty much the only one that seems to be like an outsider who's now come in. But we all know each other. A lot of us grew up together. We might have grown up with some of the NPCs, whatever. And she has started to put out these little teasers of like she created the website for Leland, Texas. Now, it wasn't a working website, but it was literally like the website page of Leland and what's happening and what the things are. She's sending out like newspaper clippings of the Leland Times about all building up, like putting you into the story, but in a way where Tony, like you were saying, we're going to hit the ground running at such a speed that I really feel like we might be able to keep the momentum going hardcore for that full session, because there's so much that we're like, well, okay, I know this and I know this. Like, we feel like we're really part of that town. Like, it's this gigantic session zero that she's, in essence, concocted for the one shot.
So the backstory can give the direction for a character in the longer term of the campaign. It can create the map for the DM to draw where they should be going. This wasn't necessarily she was looking for, at least how I saw, a deep backstory construction as much as she did a fact-finding about each of the individual characters, which I can only presume will allow her to not only properly hook the adventure. You know, I feel about a gummy worm weak hook on an adventure, Tomb of Annihilation. That was just, you know, it's got to really catch you in the beginning. And then there's things not only to interest us directly throughout, but then to probably scare the crap out of us. Because you're looking, she has like the whole comprehensive psychology list of
each. We've created the list of how we want to be tortured and given it to her, right?
But you don't have to do that in 5e. Like these are not like that doesn't require like a typical 5e adventure. You're going to save a town for some goblins. You're going to go into a mine that there's some strange sounds hearing from them. Well, you don't need that kind of character info. That kind of comes out. And one of the reasons I think that this is probably will work as intended is because then you have more time for these things to come out during the length of a campaign versus this intense, tight, movie-like cinematic frame that she's operating in.
But I mean, at the same time, I think that there's a space in the 5e for the backstories, even sort of like a Cthulhu level one. It's just that it's the one thing that with the role-playing in Cthulhu that I worry about is that it's going to be like the first session of D&D in that everyone's going to be like, oh my God, I've never seen it. Right. Like it's going to be a whole lot of, this is the first time I'm experiencing anything like that. So a lot of the role play, obviously because it's Cthulhu and stuff like that, but a lot of the role play is going to be driven by the fact that they're going to be seeing these strange and horrible things for the first time. Right. All these, you know, incredible secrets revealed and stuff like that. So I think that even with most of what we've written on the sheet, as soon as we get in there and they start to have to like, we talked a lot about what we like and don't like, but when they start to see some kind of like Cthulhu's head coming out of something like that, they're like, my dislike of cheese is not going to be like I'm going to have a dip. Like, it's going to be like, crumple up that sheet and throw it. And I'm going to be a different person after that point, because I'm going to be frightened as hell.
So we've all talked about it, that you, in essence, you meet the players where they are. And I think this was a good example of that, too, just from my conversations with Elizabeth while we've been doing this. I never would have, without my friend, my AI friend, I would have never gone through this 20 questions. I literally helped. I loaded them all up and gave it an idea of who I wanted to be. And it helped me craft something that I could do in 15, 20 minutes and make a really cool character. That I was like, yes, this is exactly who I am, instead of literally going through each of the ones and answering them. But
I went through each one.
You went through Dave got through high school.
Yeah, I agonized over a couple.
No, I loaded them all up. But so I'm thinking back to some of the campaigns we've done, and I remember the Slaver's Bay campaign. Now, Chris, you brought your Dragonborn warlock, Amon Zul, who had this like deep backstory and this reason for, his patron and where he was from. And it worked into like I had stuff that I was like, oh, I can do like level 20 stuff with this Amon Zul stuff, which, spoilers, it was going to be very Cthulhu-esque. I mean, in essence, like
was the vibe he was going for.
Yeah, his patron was Yog-Sothoth, in essence, right? Like, that's pretty much where it was, the Keeper of the Ways. But just a little spoilers for that one. But then I remember, like, Thorin's stepdad, Matt, came with his orc cleric, and Thorin was trying to get backstory for me from him, and he was texting me back and forth. And I said, okay, well, just, like, where's he from? And he said his name and that he was from Philly. Like, it was just like literally Philadelphia. And I'm like, okay. So like, but I went with that. And then like, Thorin's wife, Shannon, right? She came with Duma and she wielded a sword. And like, I was like, okay, well, that's where I'm meeting you at, right? So what I'm getting at here, so you have that wide berth of people who want to give you like, I want to kill things and I have a sword too. I have a tragic backstory. My parents were murdered. You know, right? And that's what I saw when we got the 20 questions, Doc. And then, like, for instance, Tony, like I know Jen was just like, yeah, I'm out, dude. I don't even know what's happening here, right? But Liz came back to her and she said, okay, well, I really just need this and this, like, give me something that can that will tie you into this town and why you might be investigating what's going to be happening, like, that's all. And then she went all the way from that to people who wanted to give, here's all the my deep 20 questions, this is what he most fears, this is, but it wasn't like, okay, well, if you're not answering this 20 questions, then you're not going to play the game and whatever. It's more just like, oh, okay, so I'm going to meet you where you are. And I think that's, again, like a lot of what we do, and it's a great piece of advice for backstory stuff of any system and any one-shot or campaign you're running, is meet the person where they are. Some people are really going to get into wanting to give you a lot of stuff, and they're going to do that without almost you asking. You're going to have some people that won't give you almost anything, and you have to drag everything out. But you will also have, and I know we came across this with this, people who at first went, oh man, what the hell, but then quickly fell into, oh yeah, I really, okay, and the ball really started rolling for them. So, keep it open, because you never know, what might come out of that, but meeting the player where they are at first. All right. So it's about that time for some final thoughts on our return to the world of H.P. Lovecraft in the modern day. We have already talked about the stairs. There are definitely not going to be any stairs in there. She did say she did promise me that no one is going to like die like right in the first scene or anything, like, she's aware that we're all playing a game, and it kind of sucks to just like go and eat pizza and watch people play a game. So, we have a little bit of guardrail for a time in the game, at least. But is there such a thing as too much character backstory, too much development? What do we guys think? Final thoughts.
Circling back, I feel that the DM, lore keeper, GM, whoever, and the player need to have some open communication about this so that the person running the game is getting a decent amount of info to help shape the course of the game, and the player's got something to work with at the start of the game. And if they really want to write three lines and show up with a goofy voice, then have at it. It's a little harder. I mean, improv's not always my thing, but that character, you know, Hawk, spoke to my soul, so that was a good time there. If you create a fantastic backstory, please share it with the rest of your party, because this is a collaborative game. Everybody can have their individual story along with this giant collective story, kind of just like a stew, and it all mixes together and it enhances the flavor.
A couple things I would say about it. Number one, no, there isn't too much character development, but it's only as much as you want as the character wants to bring, right? At the end, we're all just going to get together at a table and talk in funny voices and play a game, right? And roll some dice and, in this case, go crazy and then probably die at the end. Right. But in a one shot context, I think this all needs to be taken in that. But I think so. If you take it like a lot of things that I think we're saying, like there's a power in getting an idea of what your character is beforehand. And one of the things that this actually made me think of, and one of the an idea that I actually wrote down that I'm going to implement now the next time that I do this, is that I'm going to provide some questions when asking for a backstory. It may not be the 20 questions thing, but I think as we start to talk about it, is that it's like if I give you questions, I at least point you at these are the things that I want to know about your character. These are the things that might be important to the campaign here. You give me anything else that you want to, but here's a little bit of guidance for you when you're going to give me your couple paragraphs about what they are or a sentence or whatever like that that you're going to kind of bring there. So, but and I think it's good, and I think it's, you know, in this case with the one shot, it's a shame because of that, but perhaps maybe they'll come back or one or two of them will survive and continue to be able to expand upon their characters. But I think that there's something to the progression of characters as you play through them two or three sessions that they start to really become, you start to really get into character development. Like they say, like when you're the actor, you read the script, then you're playing them in front of the camera, it changes it, or in front of the audience, then all of a sudden you have to embody them, right? It's not like a thing anymore. You have to get into it. So it changes a little bit what you thought it was going to be there. So leaving room for that. But I'm very excited, and I 100% agree with you about what I think the prep for this and the immersion, I think that's something that's good, and you can even leverage that in your D&D campaigns and other ones, is that provide pictures and lore, bits of lore as teasers and stuff like that to your group to kind of start to seed those ideas and provide things for them to talk about when they get there. You know, they may not know what to talk about, but in this case, people will have an article or a reference to somebody from this or one of those things that they can start to use to be able to just to act as a conversation starter versus having to worry about one of these, I have to show who my character is in here. Now we have some common regular knowledge to be able to talk about instead of exactly just immediately spilling our backstories and our greatest fears, right? Like it'll allow us to be a little bit more like natural characters.
Chris, that was a really great point that you made. I think a lot of times we'll ask people like we talk about backstory. Everyone talks about, you give me your backstory. What's the backstory? But that's kind of this open-ended thing. That's like, tell me about yourself. That's a little hard. But if I say, what do you think about this? Do you like this or this? When you have those pointed questions, that's a lot easier to start answering. And they actually might start to elucidate on that point even more because they get a roll on. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think that's a great tip and something that I very well might utilize as well. It's almost like like a switch on the six truths idea of Mike Shays, but they're giving you their six truths, as it were, one of the other things I think that's going to be interesting, and I know it started out just as an accident, but then she started to kind of play with it and like kind of put, but she's in essence, like we're all kind of being paired off in a way where we kind of know one of the other characters very well. like that other person, like we have a deep connection with them in some fashion. And I think that's going to be another interesting way, because we've talked many times about, you know, a good way to get backstory out on the table is to have other players know a little bit of it and ask you about it. You know, I've talked about that with like narrative side quests. You give them some of the lore and some of the secrets, and they're probably going to start spilling it at the table, hopefully. But yeah, I think the biggest thing about all of this and what really spurred this question was that we don't know how she runs games. No idea, because we've never played with her. She's never played with us. So this is very much a blind date at the table, because no one knows how anyone handles anything. So I'm very interested to see how she does take this information, and just seeing how it's happened so far, but take this information and see how much it gets thrown into the game, because as we do all the time, anytime someone else is running, we're always sitting there picking up, I like this, I don't like that, I really like that, I don't like that. So it'll be interesting to see what wisdom, additional wisdom we glean from this game. So you guys might hear about it forward after we actually play. That'll be this weekend we'll be playing. So that's it for me, though. This was not a listener question. Again, this is what we're doing in our games, but we are DMs with problems. We love to help DMs with problems. So send us your problems, your questions, your issues, anything you're dealing with at the game you'd like us to jawbone about for an hour or so. Obviously, you can reach out to us at 3wisedms.com, our website, and put it in the What's Your Problem field. You can reach us by email at 3wisedms@gmail.com. You can also get us on Facebook and Instagram. We are very active on both of those sites. And I'm going to be definitely bringing out maybe a couple sets of my percentile dice this time, because, Cthulhu is a percentile system, and I just feel like some of them aren't going to roll well, so I got to have some backups. And for your backups, I would say go to FanRoll Dice, our affiliate link at fanrolldice.com/REF/2871. You put in the code 3WiseDMs10, that's the number 3, WiseDMs, the number 10, you get 10% off your order. They got some really cool dice out there. They're always coming out with some new stuff. But that's going to be it for us this episode. And as we do each episode, we are going to let our dear old erstwhile leader, who absolutely loved Lovecraft and Cthulhu, take us out.
And thank you to all of you listening from home. We really appreciate it. If you liked what you've been listening to, please smash that 5-star rating button. Let us know. Leave a good review. Tell your friends. That really helps us grow. If you'd like to hear us answer any question you have, send it to us at 3wisedms@gmail.com, or go to our website, 3wisedms.com, and enter it in the What's Your Problem field. Or you can talk to us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're active on all those platforms, so feel free to drop by, send us a question, and we'll see if we can make it on the show. That's it for this week. We'll see you next time, 3 Wise Deals.